empathy and self-compassion are not the human default condition. So we're going to get into this later, but Brené Brown is a huge mentor to me. I just spent the summer training with her, and I'm actually now certified to teach her curriculum. And she always says, self-compassion and empathy are not our default. They're things that have to be learned and practiced. The human default is self-criticism. And that's why the world's in the fucked up state that it's in right now, I believe. Because when we're so judgmental in, we're also very judgmental out. But when we can be more compassionate in, when I can say, Jody, yes, my habits aren't always perfect. I'm stuck in some really bad ones, even as a naturopathic doctor. But I can guarantee that all of my colleagues have something too. I'm going to be more gentle with myself, knowing I'm not the only one. But if I feel that I'm the only one, I am going to beat myself up in such a way that is going to keep me stuck. You will never change the habits you want to change when you're in judgment of them. Ever. Ever.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So how many of you already thought 2020 might be a little bit different? How many of you set a resolution or a goal that you were ready to start on January 1st and already you are finding it quite challenging? My guest today, Dr. Jody Larry, has a message for all of you. It is not about whether you stuck with it. It's not about how long you were on that horse. It all has everything to do with how you get back on, how you manage those failures, how you start fresh again tomorrow. Jody Larry has built her business over the last 14 years on helping people understand the things that drive our behavior. What started as a 10-day cleanse related to food, she quickly realized was a completely transformational experience in people's lives. Jody is an expert at bringing mindset to the table, the mindset that enables us to shift the behaviors that are holding us back. And it's not about having more willpower. It's not about having a stern talking to. She does all of this deeply transformative work by teaching us how to be more self-compassionate and empathetic towards our goals. You will not survive 2020 and the goals and visions you have set for yourself without understanding a little bit more about this woman and the wisdom that she brings to the table. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Jody Larry. Dr. Jody Larry, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
Well, we have a lot to unpack, and the timing couldn't be better with the front of a new year, a new decade, laying the foundation for how we are going to live our lives in 2020. Before we unpack all of those things, can you give everyone a little bit of a background in terms of who you are and how you ended up here today?
For sure. So my name is Jody Larry. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I've been in practice for about 13 years now, which always makes me feel old when I say that, but it is the truth. And I have been into naturopathic medicine since I was actually about 10 years old when I my parents took me on a trip to Africa. And I came home and I was struck with a very rare virus. And to make a long story short, I was in and out of many hospitals, sick kids for 3 months, Toronto General, North York. And after a year of many doctors and hospitalizations, no one really knew what was wrong. And my mom took me to a naturopathic doctor. And this was, I guess, almost 30 years ago when no one knew what that was. And the woman completely cured me. So ever since I was 10, I haven't touched an Advil. I've never taken an antibiotic. Naturopathic medicine is in my bones. It's in my blood. And it was always what I knew I wanted to do for other people too, was to show them that, you know, there is another way. And in fact, not only is there another way, but oftentimes when you take care of yourself using these types of principles, not only do you get healthy from the condition that you're trying to change, but you start to thrive in your life and you start to live a life beyond, you know, your imagination, which is really what we're trying to do for people.
I love this idea of thriving in your life, because I think for so many people, their association with seeking medical care is to alleviate a set of symptoms so they can go back, going back to living their lives. And when, and I think we've both had this experience, when you actually shift someone's health and you show them what the potential of their health could be, it's like this veil of possibility is lifted for them. And it's so powerful. It's a totally different side of health that people have never even been told existed.
It really is. And I learned it at a young age, you know, at 10 years old, I learned, you know, because through the transformation that she took me through, obviously I changed my diet and all these things. And most young kids are eating, who are we kidding? Like a lot of sugar, right? And a lot of carbs and a lot of quick, easy foods. And there's no judgment. I don't want anyone that's listening to this. My kids are right there too sometimes. None of us are perfect. But what that does to our health at any age, you know, we don't really realize until we take it away and then we really see how we can function on a daily basis. And, you know, we're going to get into this, but when I put people through my cleanse program and they really get to see what it's like to nourish their bodies with, you know, only good, healthy foods for 10 days, what happens is it's miraculous. And it's not really such a miracle. But when people actually just start to be conscious of what they're putting into their bodies, what changes is remarkable. And not just the physical symptoms, but one of the most amazing emotional symptoms that I find when people start to take care of themselves is that their resilience to stress increases. And to me, that is priceless. In the day that we're, you know, the way we live now, to be able to say my stress resilience is better, I can handle more, that is priceless. And just from food.
Yeah, and that's the part that's so powerful. Okay, so can you take people through how your work has evolved? Because
yes,
for people who've worked with a naturopathic doctor before and this idea of, you know, a one-off appointment and then they're you know, putting you on a program, and that's not what you were doing. And when you say cleanse, I always find it a bit of a misnomer, because I feel like the process you take people through is actually this sort of three-dimensional transformation. It's not a typical cleanse you're picking up in a health food store. So just give people some insight in terms of the depth of work that you're actually doing when you're talking about cleansing.
Okay. So this did evolve over time, for sure. And I want to tell a story of how the cleanse started, because I think it really does illuminate the importance of community and accountability, which in my opinion is key to making changes. Nobody, and I mean nobody, can do it alone. Maybe there's 1-2% of people that can be given a program and follow it. But most people that I see when they're alone, even if I give them the same program one-on-one, they don't do it the way they do it in community. So how the cleanse actually started almost 10 years ago was that I wanted to do a cleanse. It was probably New Year's. I wanted to do a cleanse. I'd learned all about them in school. And I would always get to day 3 or 4, me, the naturopathic doctor, and I couldn't continue on. All the excuses that come in the head, right? Oh, it's just annoying. Oh, I want my coffee, whatever it was. So I had two girls that were just opening up a yoga studio at the time, and they wanted to do it too. And I said, why don't we be a team? And this three-person team became, you know, 20 people. And thus was the first cleanse for life.
That's
no
awesome.
Joke. That is how it started. And it was epic. And we all followed it. We did 10 days, no refined sugar, no gluten, no dairy, no coffee. We were just feeding ourselves really good, nourishing foods. And when the program was over, people had shifted major digestive symptoms. People's moods were better. Their energy were better. And they just felt, you know, part of something. It was remarkable. And I'm not kidding. That is how Cleanse for Life started, because I couldn't do it alone. And in community, we all thrived. It was just magical. And since then, I've run, you know, hundreds of programs all over the city, you know, in lots of different ways. But the community aspect is really key. But then what I saw was people would go through the program. They'd feel better than they've ever felt in their lives. But time would pass and stress would come and emotions would come, hard ones. And they would go right back to the sugar, the coffee, the not taking care of themselves, despite knowing how good they felt, right? And that's when I saw that there was a missing link. So about 4 or 5 years into this, I realized this is not enough. This is not enough. Just giving these people the foundational piece is not enough, because there's a whole mental, emotional piece that if they're not looking at, they're not going to stick with any of this. So then I started to get a little bit more involved with sort of people's relationship with themselves and how that affected their food choices. And I found that when people started to look at the mental, emotional piece, when they started to look at really just inward on how they spoke to themselves, what they thought about themselves when they failed or when they didn't fail, and how that related to their food choices, then there was long-term success. But with just the physical education alone, people could really only get so far. But when you combined the community piece, the support piece, and the mental emotional piece, then it was really like lifestyle shifts. You know what I mean? Like really changing their life through the program, not just doing it for 10 days. Well, and that's where, sorry, do you want to?
No, you keep going. Keep
that's
going.
That's where I really
don't stop.
Is the missing link with all these sort of fad diet programs. I hate the word diet. I won't even use it on this podcast or ever in my life or in my world. I think it's just a horrible word. And I like to use the word live it. I give people live it's. I give them ways that they can live a lifestyle based on nourishing their body with food. And that can mean many different things to many different people. I don't like to pigeonhole people into one way. You know, some people do well with oats. Some people don't do well with oats. Some people do really well with multigrain bread, even though it has gluten, and some people don't. There's no one way, but the live it should be eating foods that nourish you, period.
Well, and it's amazing how this is so intuitive and obvious to us. And even CNN came out with the other day, it's the front of the new year, the list of the best and worst diets for 2020. And I was like, can we just stop with this need to have all of these dietary verticals? Like, there were different people with different physiology and different emotional needs and different evolutionary patterns. And we're all going to thrive on, we're going to thrive on different diets. Like news break here. Like, this isn't breaking news that that we're all going to thrive in different ways. Like, we all thrive at different work. We all thrive with, some people like to ski, some people like a beach. Like, it's this is not earth shattering science here, and yet we have this need to have the one size fits all answer to health, which really is the antithesis of what we do as naturopathic doctors. We are not about finding the single solution for everyone. It's how do we start to individualize these things? And I love that you've done that with your work. But that emotionality component, I agree with you, is so key. I have never met anyone in my life who doesn't have some sort of emotional relationship to food or a consumable. So some people are like, you know, we've got this whole category. It's more often than men. They're like, I just eat to nourish myself. I don't have all this dependence. I'm like, yeah, but you know, you're drinking alcohol every night, or you're having your 3 cups of coffee throughout the course of the day. Like, we all have our consumable crutch, as it were. How do you address that?
So the first thing for people to get past these habits, so I like to call them habits where the intention doesn't align with the goal. And everyone has one. Everyone. There's not one person.
I don't have one.
You do.
Just as we
have the thing, whether it's drinking too much wine, eating too much sugar, you know, yelling at our kids is a common one, I find, right? A lot of people wake up in the morning and it's like, I'm not going to yell this morning. I'm not going to yell this morning. And then 5 minutes in, we've yelled.
Did you wake up at my house this morning?
You know what I mean? So like, we all have something, and this could be a whole podcast episode on its own. So I'm not going to get into all the details of it, but there's reasons why we all have something that we use to comfort ourselves. It usually started young, and that's why food is an issue for a lot of people, because when we're young and our parents want to quiet us down quickly, they know that giving us a lollipop will do that. Right? When we're sad or we've bruised our knee, we get ice cream. right? Food from a very young age for most of us was a way to comfort. Now, if we never broke that through the years, and most people didn't, they just kept going, then even at 40 or 45 or 70, unconsciously, food is still going to be something that you go to when you're stressed, even if it's not something that you want to be doing. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Okay. So everybody has these habits. The problem is that most people don't get that everybody has these habits, and they think they're the only one. So when they think they're the only one that eats, you know, a box of cookies because they've had a bad day, or drinks too much wine, or yells at their kids again and again, then there becomes a lot of judgment. And as soon as there is judgment, there is no growth. I'm gonna say that again.
I was like, can you please say that again? Because I think for so many people, they're like,
yeah, I'm going to say that again.
It's that I'm in my own silo and I'm the only one. That's so good.
Yeah. As soon as, and I repeat this to my clients over and over and over again, because it's really important. And it's, if people listening take this one piece away, they've done good. If as soon as there is judgment, there is no growth, no growth. So if I wake up in the morning and I say, today I'm not eating sugar, okay? I feel disgusting. I've gained 5 pounds. The holidays have been awful on me. I feel bloated, etc. I am not eating sugar today, can hella high water. And then it's 1 p.m. and I've had a crazy morning with my kids. And the next thing I know, sugar's in my mouth. I have two choices, okay? We all have two choices when that happens. We can do choice A, which is to beat ourselves up. What the hell's wrong with you, Jody? Here you are again. You're so weak. You're never going to do it. You're always going to be overweight. Which is actually going to make me eat more sugar, for sure. Scientifically, neuroscientifically, it shows that. Because when we are in judgment, we stay in a part of our brain called the amygdala, which wants instant gratification. Okay? So as I'm beating myself up, I'm making myself feel so uncomfortable, and my brain is going to want more sugar, okay? And stop me if this is too technical and I can break it down. If I at 1 o'clock, same scenario, same thing happens, and I'm able to say to myself, okay, Jody, you're human. This is your issue. This is the issue you've had for a long time with sugar. You're really stressed. You know when you're stressed, you go to sugar. It's okay. Breathe. You're human. You're not the only person in this predicament. Everyone is in this predicament in some way, shape, or form. Be kind, be gentle, and let's try to make the next best decision. I have a way better chance of not choosing sugar over the next few hours or for the remainder of the day if I'm kind and compassionate and I understand that I'm not a total fuck up. Whereas if I'm beating myself up and berating myself for what I've done, I am going right to the sugar for sure within the next hour.
So why the heck do we do that? Like, why do we just default to being so mean to ourselves?
It's really a brain thing. When we're in the emotional part of our brain, when we're in that amygdala, we're more prone to judgment and criticism. We just are. And most people's default, it's very sad, but most people's default is self-judgment and self-criticism. Empathy and self-compassion are not the human default condition. So we're going to get into this later, but Brené Brown is a huge mentor to me. I just spent the summer training with her, and I'm actually now certified to teach her curriculum. And she always says, self-compassion and empathy are not our default. They're things that have to be learned and practiced. The human default is self-criticism. And that's why the world's in the fucked up state that it's in right now, I believe. Mm-hmm. Because when we're so judgmental in, we're also very judgmental out. But when we can be more compassionate in, when I can say, Jody, yes, my habits aren't always perfect. I'm stuck in some really bad ones, even as a naturopathic doctor. But I can guarantee that all of my colleagues have something too. I'm going to be more gentle with myself, knowing I'm not the only one. But if I feel that I'm the only one, I am going to beat myself up in such a way that is going to keep me stuck. You will never change the habits you want to change when you're in judgment of them, ever, ever.
Oh, it's so good.
So it's very important that people know that, okay? Shame, when we have failed on a goal, say with diet or health or exercise or whatever it is, or yelling at our kids, and we are beating ourselves up, that is going to cause more pain and discomfort, which is going to cause us to want the comfort again. Do you see? Whereas if we can give ourselves comfort when we're struggling with what we've done internally, when I can calm myself down by saying, Jody, it's okay, you're human, your brain works this way, everyone's brains work this way, you know, that's another thing too. We all have the same brain. People don't get it. We all have an amygdala. We all have a cortex. We all, when we're emotional, want to yell or react. It takes a lot of practice to change that. But when I can change that, when I can be more compassionate and also know that I'm not terminally unique, and this is a Brené Brown term, she really believes that we need to understand that we're not terminally unique, meaning nothing we've ever felt or experienced has not been felt or experienced by another human being.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can know that, we can bring more compassion to ourselves because we know that we're just human. We're the same as everyone else. We're trying our best. We're putting in our best efforts. Our brains, unfortunately, especially over the age of 35, are very hard to change. It's very hard to change over the age of 35. I don't know if you read, are you into Joe Dispenza at all?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm obsessed with him these days. He's really incredible. And he, I was watching a podcast of his the other day, and he said that your brain is so conditioned by the time you turn 35 that it becomes like a computer program. So trying to change habits after 35 takes a lot of awareness and a lot of work and a lot of consistency and a lot of self-compassion. Because if you're going to beat yourself up every time you fail, you're going to stay stuck. But if you can have the awareness, know it's hard to make changes, know our brains, unfortunately, are, you know, set up to, our brains are set up in a way that don't really breed change unless we're aware.
They say that you are the product of the five people with whom you spend the most time. Imagine you could spend time with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs and go-getters looking to up-level their business, body, and mindset. The Entrepology Collective does not belong to us. It belongs to you. Come hang out with us on Facebook and let us collectively inspire, support, and cheerlead you towards your vision for contribution, your commitment towards better health, and your journey of mindset mastery. We are in this together. We are entrepreneurs by birth, by choice, and by mission. We are the Entrepology Collective. Search for us on Facebook and come join your tribe.
Right, because they're meant to keep us safe.
Yes.
Their job is not growth.
No, their job is not growth. Their job is, I'm sad, give me a cookie. And if I've been doing that since I was 5 years old and I continue to do it consciously or subconsciously, even though my intention is to stop eating cookies because I've gained 10 pounds and I feel disgusting, it takes a lot of time to really shift those habits. Guys, it's not going to happen in a week. It's not going to happen with a New Year's resolution. It's going to happen.
What?
Yeah, it's not.
I can't stand resolutions, but that's a whole other, that's a whole other case. Yeah.
It's going to happen with a lot of consistency, a lot of falling down and getting up again, and a lot of self-compassion, knowing that you're doing the best you can, knowing that you're progressing in the best way that you can, and knowing that you will get there eventually, as long as you are kind to yourself. And I want to just explain the self-compassion again for a second, because I'll use the yelling at our kids scenario, because I think that's someone that everyone can relate to. Okay, if you're a parent listening.
I can relate.
Yes. We all wake up in the morning. It's a mad dash. Most of us are in our amygdalas when we're getting prepped for the morning because it's chaotic. Okay, so as soon as you're emotional in life, the part of the brain that turns on is the amygdala. It's the emotional part. And from that part, we don't see the future. We only see the present. Okay? So even though I wake up in the morning saying I'm not going to yell today, as soon as I become emotional, I'm going to start yelling. And after I've dropped my kids off, I have two choices. I can either drive to work, you know, beating myself up. What the hell's wrong with you? Get your shit together. Why are you doing this? Blah, blah, blah. which is 100% going to make my day shitty. It's going to keep me stressed out and emotional, and it's not going to give me the perspective to try and change the next day. It's not, because you can't have perspective in the amygdala. Scenario two is the same situation happens in the morning, but I'm in the car and I say to myself, Jode, you have a lot going on. You're not the only mom that yelled at their kids this morning. Yelling happens. You're not a bad mom because you yelled. Breathe. You're doing great. You're doing amazing. I'm so proud of you. And I want you to have a great day. And I want you to try again tomorrow. That scenario is going to change everything for you, because it is going to allow you to have perspective. It's going to allow you to get into your cortex, which is the logical part of the brain, which is actually where change happens. So when I say judgment cannot get you to growth, it's because when you're in judgment, you stay in the amygdala. And growth can only happen from the cortex. It can only happen when you're in the other part of your brain. And self-compassion brings you to that part of the brain where you can see the future, where you can be logical, and where you can make choices for yourself that will allow change for you. Does that make sense?
It totally does. So here's my next question, because I see this a lot as a, even as a clinician, we get people to a place where they recognize these habits and they have these epiphanies and they're like, oh my gosh. So let's say we have someone now engaged in the state of self-compassion.
Yep.
How do we not get them locked?
It's a practice. I
Okay, that. Great. So, but they're in the practice of self-compassion. How do we ensure that they don't get caught? I'm going to call it the loop of self-compassion, where they're just like, okay, it's okay. We will try tomorrow to not drink 2 glasses of wine after work. But that there's no end to that self-compassion.
I understand. So just like as parents, we need to have boundaries with our kids, and we know that that's compassionate, right? To have boundaries.
Totally. Yes.
Say to our kids, you know, you can have 1 cookie. You can't have 2 cookies because you'll go wild. Or if a doctor tells us that our child shouldn't have milk, we will do everything in our power to make sure that they don't have milk, because that's the compassionate thing to do. So self-compassion with boundaries is very important. It can't just be like, oh, every time I eat sugar, oh, well, that's okay. No problem. We're not going to get changed that way.
Right.
We need to have self-compassion with boundaries. We need to understand why we don't want to be eating that sugar. And in that moment, when our amygdala is telling us, just eat the sugar, all I want is the sugar right now in this moment, we have to be able to say, it's literally like a child-parent relationship in our head. We have to see that we have this child in ourselves. We all do. Every single human being does, okay? That wants the sugar, that wants the wine, that wants all the stuff right now. And we have to work with this child to say, you know what? I know you want the sugar. I know you're really angry, but I don't want it. And I don't want to be bloated and overweight and tired and exhausted. So I hear that you want it, but it's not healthy for us as a whole to eat it. And you have to be able to have that awareness and perspective. Now, in the moment, it's very hard to do, as we all know, right? In the moment, when we're in that emotional place, all we want is a sugar. All the awareness has gone out the door. What I get people to do, every program I do with them, or even people that work with me one-on-one, is I actually have them write a letter to their child's state that talks about why they want to change the habit that they want to change. Because in the moment, it's hard to remember, yes? We forget in the moment. So I get them to write a letter saying, you know, dear Jody, you're 10 pounds overweight. You're completely bloated. Sugar is destroying you. In the moment, you want it, but it's destroying your health and it's destroying, you know, who you want to be. And I get them to write very, very detailed in this letter why they want to stop the habit. I then have them read the letter 3 times a day preventatively. Okay. And then also in the moment when they're having the craving, to bring them back to the adult reasons why they don't want to be doing it. The adult has to be a part of it. The adult part of our brain has to be a part of the equation, or it'll just be like you said, eat the cookie, self-compassion, eat the cookie, self-compassion, and nothing will change. So prevention is important. And I think that letter, knowing your intentions, knowing why that part of your brain doesn't want to be engaged in that habit, connecting with that intention every single day preventatively, and then also when you need it. That's like rewiring the brain, right? And that's how we do it. It sounds kind of like, oh, that sounds like really simple. I can tell you that a lot of my clients do it for a week and then don't do it, right? Because people forget and they get busy. But when people read that letter 3 times a day, and then every time they have a craving, I find within 21 days, they start to really make changes. And then if they continue on for 62 days, the habit truly does shift. Because it takes 21 days to shift a habit. It takes 62 days for new brain chemistry to actually start to develop. So for the wiring in the brain to change actually takes 62 days. And it doesn't even have to be consistent, the habit. Like, you could have blips, but if the majority of your choices are the new choice that you want to make, after 62 days, it will become way easier for you to make that habit a lifestyle, which is what we want. We want it to be a lifestyle, right? We want people to change their relationship with sugar. We want them to go off coffee if it's harming them. We want them to embody these habits so it becomes a lifestyle, not a diet that they do for a month. That's why I hate when weight loss is the goal. Because when weight loss is the goal and then they lose the weight, they're done. But when health is the goal, they're never done. That's why I hate diets and programs so much. Because it's like, okay, I finished this program. Great. Now what? What about a program that fosters lifestyle changes, that allows you to really shift the way you live your life, the way you are in your life, the way you think in your life? That's what we really want.
Well, and it's health is not a finite goal, and we live in this finite world. And Simon Sinek has a new book where he talks about this, but we are kind of set up. We list our goals, we're goal oriented, we hit that goal, and the challenge with the brain is, well, then what? And so I love what you're saying, and health is exactly the same way. It is not a finite goal. It's an infinite goal. It is a journey. It is a process. There's always something that comes next, and it just requires it's a different commitment. It is an ongoing piece. It's kind of like aging. It's happening regardless whether you want it to or not. And when we start to shift that piece, we start to change the behavior in accordance with that particular goal. When we have a new criteria for what it means to meet that goal, and it's not an end place, we can totally shift our behavior. And what we've seen in practice is that when people have a sense of purpose, when they can identify what their purpose is in life, not their purpose around that goal, but in life, they stick to the change that they want to make, because it fuels the purpose. It fuels something bigger than the weight loss, or that I just want to heal my IBS, or I want to be less anxious, or I need more energy. When there's nothing juicy behind it, there's no reason to make that change. So for us, like, a huge criteria of working with us is you need to have a level of awareness around where you want to contribute broadly, whether that's your local community or in your family, whatever it is. But we need to tap into that sense of purpose first. Otherwise, it's really hard. And you probably have different techniques, but I find it really hard to drive change for people if we don't have something more important than 5 pounds.
I agree. I also think that it's very important that people hear that the path to health, or the path to growth, or the path to whatever you want to call it, it is not linear. There is nothing linear about this journey. And that's also where self-compassion, I think, comes in, because a lot of people feel that, okay, they'll start a New Year's resolution, they'll be really good for a month, they'll go to the gym, they'll eat all the right food, they'll feel incredible, and then they'll fall. And that fall, what they do from that fall is so unbelievably key, I believe, to what happens next.
So let's set that up for people, because we are right in January. We are at the beginning of the year. We have people who are like, okay, I was going to go to the gym this year. And yeah, we're right at that precipice of where things are starting to crumble a little bit. So let's give people some really, really practical this, this, and this.
Yeah.
So they can get themselves back.
Yeah. that getting yourself back from the fall is just part of the journey, right? Yes. I believe. But unfortunately, most people think, oh, I've fallen. I'm done. I can't do it.
I'll wait till next January.
Right. And that's, again, where the whole brain chemistry comes in. As soon as you're in all or nothing thinking, you have to know that you are in the part of your brain that is going to stagnate your growth. Okay. So as soon as you start thinking, oh, I've already had the one glass, might as well have the bottle. You know, I've already screwed it up. So might as well just have the whole night, you know, eating poorly. Oh, well, it's Tuesday and I've already, you know, screwed up. So might as well fuck the whole week. Like that, again, is never going to get you to growth because it's going to keep you in your child mind, which just wants instant gratification. If you know going into any change that failure is part of the journey, falling is going to happen, especially when it comes to health habits, especially when it comes to long ingrained habits that we have, then you know, oh God, here I am again. The holidays took me off course. This vacation took me off course. This stress took me off course. No big deal. You know, she told me it was going to happen. I just got to rise again. And what's going to allow you to rise again, this is where self-compassion comes in. Because if you go down the route of, I suck, I'm a failure, I'm always going to be fat, I'm never going to do it, I have no willpower, that's another one I hear all the time, and that's bullshit. Sorry, I'm swearing a lot.
it's all good.
I have no willpower. That is bullshit. Okay? It's not about willpower. It's about understanding your brain and how it works, and being really patient with yourself and having a lot of support and a community to help you get to your goals. Okay? It's not about willpower. So when you fail, if you can say to yourself, I'm here, this sucks, I knew this was going to happen, no big deal, I'm going to really try to get myself back. This is what I suggest. I suggest that you first try on your own. And some people can. Some people can just sort of say, okay, I'm doing it. I'm starting tomorrow. If that does not work after 1 week, okay, then I highly recommend that you reach out for support. And that could mean calling up your naturopathic doctor, calling up your nutritionist, calling up a therapist, calling up the person that helped you get on track in the first place. There's no shame in doing that. No naturopathic doctor thinks that one or two or three sessions, you're cured for life. We all know the path isn't linear, correct? So if after 1 week on your own, you're still in the same place, you reach out for support. What most people do, Megan, and I'm sure you see this too, when they've failed, and I'm saying that in quotations, or when they've fallen off track, they hide. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Right? They don't call you. They hide from you because they're embarrassed.
Right.
Guys, none of us are shaming you. We want you, if you're not, you know, having the habits that you know allow you to feel good, we want you to call us up because it's our jobs to help you get back. So try for a week on your own. If you fail, please reach out for support, however that looks, whoever supports you or guides you. The third thing that you can do is I highly recommend that you get an accountability partner. So if you don't have a naturopath, say, or you know, you can't afford a program or something like that, get a friend. As soon as there's accountability, as soon as you've told someone else your goals, it's way harder to fail. If I call you up and say, Megan, I've been drinking too much wine over the holidays. I want to, you know, stop drinking wine during the week. Let's do it together.
Right.
And every night, every morning, I text you, Megan, how'd it go last night? You're going to probably want to be able to say to me, it went awesome, Jode. And me too. Okay, day two. It was hard, but I'm doing it. I'm doing it. But if I just sort of say in my own head, I'm not going to drink wine during the week, bullshit.
Right.
Bullshit. Monday's going to come and I'm going to do it. So accountability is really key with little habits or big habits. And then the other thing that I recommend is you have to know yourself. So some people can wean, whereas some people need to cut it. And you'll learn that over time. If you find that, you know, say you've been off sugar for a month and one cookie, you're back where you started from, then you know someone that you're somebody that really has to make a commitment to get it out for a period of time before you can even try to be more moderate with it.
Right.
Whereas some people can be more moderate with it. Some people can say, you know what, I'm cutting it out of my week and I'm going to have it on the weekend. You have to know yourself well enough and be honest with yourself as to who you are and where you fall in that category to know how you're going to get out of the hole. Yeah. And that's something that's going to take time. And because the path isn't linear, you're going to see over time where you fall. And then it's up to you to be honest with yourself as to what you have to do to get back on track. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. And this is such, this is total gold sitting in January when we really do willpower ourselves into resolutions. And the reason I'm so challenged with them as a concept is that I feel like no one's ever set us up for success with respect to walking into a new year. The idea of a resolution is a total exercise in willpower. And we pretty much now know that willpower in and of itself doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist.
And we don't tie it to a broader sense of purpose. We don't tie it to a broader goal. One of the things I am committing to in 2020 is going to bed earlier. I'm going to bed earlier because it sets my whole morning up for success. And when my whole morning is set up for success, my whole day is set up for success. And the reason I want that to happen is because I have some big goals for 2020. So this idea of going to bed early, one may label it a resolution, but it's so much deeper and robust and three-dimensional than simply a commitment to willpower. Yes. And I love what you're saying, because that's in essence what you're also talking about, is that we have to set ourselves up for success. We have to be compassionate and speak kindly to ourselves, and that this is truly a trajectory in growth and development, and it's part of the human experience. It's 100%. Actually what binds us.
Yep, it is. We are all the same.
Yeah, we're all doing it. We're all in it together.
We are all the same. Like, you know, I remember at the beginning of my career as a naturopathic doctor, early on, you know, I wanted everybody to think that my life was perfect and I worked out 7 times a week and I ate beautifully all the time and I was this, you know, perfect specimen. And now that I've grown and matured, first of all, that doesn't exist. And second of all, I want my patients to know that I am the same as them. I have stuff that I'm working on. I'm not perfect all the time. Nobody is.
No.
I am struggling. I am falling and rising and all of these things. I am human too. We all are human. We are all the same. And when you really like absorb that, when you really take that into your body and into your mind and into your bones, your life will change. Your life will change completely. And I don't say that as a lofty thing. I say it because I know it in my soul. Because when you realize that you are the same as everyone else, you can be compassionate to yourself. You can then be way more compassionate to others. And then we connect. Then we grow. Then we're abundant, right? You talk about like abundance versus scarcity. Then we're abundant. We want to help each other out. We want to support each other. We want to connect with each other. And we want to help each other rise. And that's, again, why accountability is so key with making changes and having that support network, having that community where you can really see yourself in others and you can really see your humanity in others, so that when you do have things about yourself that you don't like, or you act in ways that you don't, you know, like, and you're asking yourself sort of, you know, why am I doing this again? It's right. Like doing this again because I'm freaking human and this is the way it works. And I'm not just going to put up my hands and say it's because I'm human, but I can be kind to myself versus berating myself and give myself a chance to grow.
A quick note from our sponsor, Badass Fuel. 2 years ago, someone asked me what supplements I take to maintain my health, my energy, and my edge. And they were surprised that I only took 4 things consistently. For myself and my patients, there are 4 basics that support, at a foundational level, nearly every system in our body. In my quest for the highest quality ingredients and the easiest system for consistently incorporating supplementation into my routine, I formulated and manufactured my own line of foundational supplements. My intention with this line was first and foremost quality, but equally important was a system for taking and naming the support that eased the incorporation of supplements into your life. Trusted for myself and my patients, under the guidance of your own healthcare provider, I'm excited to invite you to check out our foundational product line, Badass Basics. You can learn more or order the products yourself by visiting www.badassfuel.com.
Yes, I love it. And this is a perfect place to transition to the second component of our interview. And I call these our KPI questions, our key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe them, we have them in how we live our life as well. And so let's unpack you a little bit.
All right.
And let's understand what happens in Jody Larry's real life. Because I'm laughing as you're like, I had this impression, I had to be perfect, I had to do this. My brain is like, blah, 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 blah. Because I did the same. We all did the same thing. This is how you know your practitioner's been in practice for a while. They're willing to wear the truth on their sleeve. And check out their Instagram account and look for the poutine. And you'll be like, oh, okay. We've got some balance here. All right. First question for you. What's the most impactful book you've ever read?
Oh, that's a really hard one. I would say the most impactful book I have ever read would be Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. It changed my whole life. It changed the trajectory of how I work as a naturopathic doctor and how I parent, how I am in my marriage, everything.
It's classic. I love that suggestion. Yeah. What's the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Movement. 100%. And that I was consistent with before 35. So it's been very easy to stay consistent with it. The habits that we obtain before 35 usually are very easy to keep.
Mm-hmm. What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
People might otherwise know. That's a hard one.
It's my favorite question.
I spent a year living in Israel, my last year of university, and that also changed my life.
That's awesome. What do you do for fun or play?
I love yoga and I love to travel. Travel is huge for me. My husband and I are really trying everything in our power to make it a priority, and I love live music. Live music is a massive part of my life.
Yeah, live music is powerful. I feel like we could totally unpack that on a different episode. What that does to people's neurochemistry is amazing. Last question for you. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Well, Megan Walker, I can tell you after working with you for a year that we learn to become entrepreneurs. I would say the entrepreneurial spirit is something that we were born with. But to actually have the rituals and the organization and sort of the practices, I think those are learned. Because I can tell you, like I said, after working with you for a year, that I learned a lot of these things. They were not natural to me, but they can be learned. Just like self-compassion is a practice that can be learned.
Totally. Dr. Jody Larry, it is always a pleasure to chat with you. I feel like we could do this for hours. Where can we send people to learn more about what you're up to?
So my Instagram is one word, Dr. Jody Larry, JodiLarry, or my website, www.jodylarryND.com. And I do have a 10-day Cleanse for Life program coming out at the end of January. So if you're interested in that, then you can check it out there.
Amazing. We'll hook everyone up in our show notes. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
How awesome was that? If you enjoyed today's episode, we would love to receive a review from you over on Apple Podcasts. And let's keep this conversation going. What is your big vision for 2020? And how are you choosing to be compassionate with yourself as you get on and off that horse, as you move forward with your own personal growth? I love the mission that Jody is sharing. I love the way she goes about driving growth in her own life and in other other people's lives. She is a shining example for all of us, and I was so excited to bring her to all of you today. We've got more exciting episodes in the works. Come and hang out with us again next Tuesday. Subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We've got a new episode coming your way next Tuesday morning. And until then, go build something amazing.